Okay, that works. Okay, fine. So, we don't have that much left of the year, so let's try to at least get some insights on the third parak of Shema. I thought I might get farther than this, but, you know, I've lost a lot of Sundays, and we spend a lot of time on, like, you know, every word in Shema, which is not a bad thing. Okay, so, if you remember, one of the claims that I made is that an overarching theme over Kriyat Shema, as we call it, the halachic unit, even if it's not a biblical unit, is the idea of constancy, right, or consistency or constancy, whichever one you want, right, meaning the two interpretations of the word tamid, which is a point already made by the Avudraham in V'ahavta. But we noted that that theory, even though the Avudraham makes it in V'ahavta, is true in V'hayam Shemoa as well. Because in addition to the mitzvah of Yichud Hashem and Avad Hashem, right, loving God and believing God's oneness and things like that, there is mezuzah in both, which obviously is constantly on our house, and there is tefillin, which is at least a daily mitzvah. And then even Talmud Torah isn't mentioned there. It's teaching your children, which is more than just Talmud Torah, but it's the insistence on cross-generational continuity, which further emphasizes this importance of constant learning, meaning not just constant in your life, but constant over time, over generations. We noted that tefillah becomes a central theme for Chazal in the second, right? L'avdo b'chlavavchem, and tefillah is, in many ways, even if not at a biblical level, but still the idea of tefillah is constant in that sense, which you see from Daniel, which becomes the source for the three times a day davening, and but the truth is that the third paragraph of Shema as well, despite the fact that it's primary, what's the primary goal according to Chazal of the first, of the third paragraph of Shema? Yetziat Mitzrayim. Right, meaning Chazal talked about the third paragraph that the main purpose of it is Yechlatz Mitzrayim, as we know from the Haggadah, right? Even if you didn't know anything about the Chazal and you just paid attention at your Seder, you would know this, because we quote this particular machlokas in the Haggadah, which is? Yes, Kol Yimei Chayecha, meaning the whole argument is, do you say the third paragraph at night, but the machloket is centered around the question of, do you have a mitzvah to be mazkir yitziat Mitzrayim by Yom of Alayla, or the time of Mashiach? But the whole point is that the question of whether you have to say the third paragraph is framed in that machloket about when do you have to say yitziat Mitzrayim. However, there is a different tradition in Chazal, or a different voice or whatever, I don't know if it's intention, but it definitely gives a different perspective, which is the Gemara that we started with a long time ago in Brachot Yud-Gimel, which was, why do we say Shema in the order that we do? Right? And the Gemara, what's the Gemara's answer? First you do Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemayim, and then you do Kabbalat Ol Mitzvah. And then you do Kabbalat Ol Mitzvah before you do a single mitzvah, which means that there's at least other voices in Chazal that do think, and this makes sense, obviously, that it's not only about Yetzi Mitzrayim. Now, why does that make sense logically? What? Well, sure, but there's even simpler than that. The Torah talks about Yetzi Mitzrayim in a lot of places, meaning if the only purpose was Yetzi Mitzrayim, right, you could have done most things in Shemot Vayirabo. You could have done any of the Zeichelet Mitzrayim stuff. You could have done weights and measures. You could have done taking care of the ger, the almana. I mean, the notion of remembering Yetziat Mitzrayim because of a mitzvah. Okay, but the point is, the fact that it doesn't tells you that this parsha is also relevant. Yes, Ezra. Okay, you could have argued, it's definitely one of them, right? Haraya Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Zedicha Me'aretz Mitzrayim. Yeah, meaning I assume that's part of why Yetziat Mitzrayim gets here. And yeah, you could have argued the order is different. I don't know. Okay, but Chazal don't. But the point is that Chazal do seem to think that even if the primary reason to choose this parsha is Zeichlas Yimitzrayim, this paragraph in particular has other implications. And if you remember, the Rambam arguably also argues that all three paragraphs are Daraita. Right, so it does seem to think, like for the Rambam, this, it may be that this perek in particular has importance, right? So all those pieces of evidence together lead to the possibility that the third paragraph of Shema isn't just there because of Yetziat Mitzrayim, but also the rest of the perek has relevance as well. And at that level, I think that, well, I think this makes a lot of sense, right, when you think about it. And I think there's a lot of reasons for this, but let's just talk about it, some of them, okay? We'll see what we get through. Already in the parsha itself, if you knew nothing else, you would discover that tzitzit, what is the stated goal of tzitzit in the parsha? Yeah, meaning re'itim adoz karsem et kol mitzvot Hashem v'atitem otam. Meaning the parak itself gives you the idea that tzitzit is at the very least a reminder for all other mitzvot. Right now, for the, to not bore Yosef to death, but I will do this in brief, but if you remember Yosef, last year, we talked about the Gemara in Menachah, the Agadah Sa'ar Menachah, which sets out this notion, right, in painstaking detail. But let's just pick some key lines out of that. So, the Gemara says, how does it work? So Tanya, Meir Omer, Manitana Tchelet Mikol Minei Tzivonim. What, in what way is Tchelet different from all other colors? V'bnei Shat Tchelet Domel Yam. V'yam Domel Rekia. Rekia Lekisei HaKavod. Because the blue reminds you of the sea, which reminds you of the sky, which reminds you of the heavenly throne. Sh'ne'emar V'tachat Raglav K'maseh Levinat HaSapir. K'atam Hashanim L'tah O'Ktiv K'mai Evan Sapir Zimut Kisei. So, it reminds you of all of, right, it reminds you of God, admittedly in an indirect way, but that means that it is, it's there, right, the blue is there to remind you constantly to God and keep, and get you to keep all the mitzvot. Now, that same Gemara, a little bit later on, what mashal does it give, do you remember? So there it says that tzitzit is shkula keneged kol mitzvot. It's equivalent to all the mitzvot. Okay? And in that same series of statements, what else does it say? That it's like the clothes of a servant, a slave. Right? That the slave has an emblem that makes you know that you're a slave, he's a slave of his master. And tzitzit is that for God. Which we argued at the time is essentially, right, those are related in Chazal. Meaning, the reason the Shkula Keneged Kol Mitzvot is because it's a sign of our slavery, meaning, by wearing tzitzit, we're asserting that we are slaves of God, and therefore our commitment to Him is total, and that's why Shkula Keneged Kol Mitzvot. It's not just like random, it's not like a great mitzvah. But it's a mitzvah that we wear in order to remind ourselves that we are the servants of God, or the slaves of God, and therefore our commitment to Him has to be total, and that's why it's Shkula Keneged Kol HaMitzvot. So even just at the superficial level of these Ma'amarei Chazal, you see that those theses that we were talking about, right, that the overlapping theories of Shema are constancy, totality of service, right, are the things that tzitzit are there to highlight, right? They remind you of God. They remind you that you are a servant to God. And therefore, they remind you that you're committed to all the mitzvot always. Right? All of that points into those, in those same thematic directions that we saw in the rest of Shema. And therefore, I don't think it's accidental in that sense. Now, the Gemara highlights the effectiveness of tzitzit in accomplishing its goals. Do you remember this? Right, what's the very well-known story that we did last year, Yosef? Yes, exactly, right? There's a well-known story in the Gemara in Menachot Mem Daled that says that there was a person who, a Talmud, who heard about a prostitute who lived on the other side of the world. And he took 400 zuz and read that her payment is 400 zuz, which is a fortune. And he sends the 400 zuz to her. We spent a lot of time in this last year. I won't get into everything, but he sends 400 zuz to her. And he travels the world and he gets there and she is naked on the top of these seven layers of silver, silver beds that lead up to the gold bed, and there's these ladders, and he's climbing up, and what happens when he gets to the top, what happens, Yosef? The tzitzis slap him in the face, right, and he sits down on the floor, and falls on the ground, and the prostitute sits next to him, and he says, I won't let you leave until you tell me why I'm not beautiful enough for you. Right? And what does he say? I promise you are the most beautiful woman I've ever seen, but God gave us a small mitzvah called tzitzit, which reminds us that I am God who will punish for the sins that you do, and therefore the tzitzit are like four witnesses to me, and they have reminded me that I should not sin with you. And eventually, the end of the story is he goes home. She says, I won't let you leave until you write down your name and the name of your Rebbe and the name of your Beit Midrash. And then she goes, she sells all her property, travels, converts, and marries this guy, Beheter, blah, 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 blah. And happily ever after, right? Okay. So, what?
Mazel Tov.
Mazel Tov. Exactly.
Great story.
Great story. But what's the point?
Well,
exactly. So, but again, what do you see in that type of, what do you see in that Gemara? Right? That the point of tzitzit is to be a constant reminder, constant witnesses to the fact that God is there so that you don't sin. Again, this idea of total commitment, of God's presence constantly being there, and as we've talked about, mitzvot, which, and Kabbalah and Malachot Shemayim that reinforce each other, right? You accept God, which leads you to commit, perform the mitzvot. You perform the mitzvot, which reminds you about your commitment to God. Right? That reinforcing nature, even at a superficial level of Chazal, that's what tzitzit are there for. And it's quite powerful in that sense. Yes, sir?
I have a big question. You
just
say no, you don't do.
Yes, sir.
So
the kippah is, at a certain level, supposed to remind you that God is there, but it's a much later midhug.
Yeah.
Right? It's a midhug. Meaning in many ways, yes. Right? In many ways, right, we take the cue from, I would say, yeah, we take the cue from certain mitzvot where there's powers to reminders.
What's the point of the cue? Because
whatever, you know. It's a reminder. It's whatever. But look, symbolism has a lot of power. It just does. Here, look, I have here a nice little study, okay? This is one of my favorite little pieces in this context. It's from Dan Ariely in his book, The Honest Truth About Dishonesty. He tells the following. He says, one professor at Middle Tennessee State University got so fed up with cheating among his MBA students that he decided to employ a more drastic honor code, inspired by our Ten Commandments experiment. Now, what's the Ten Commandments experiment? Ten Commandments experiment is like this. If before someone takes a test, you tell them to think about the Ten Commandments, many studies have shown that they will cheat less. And that's true even if they fail to remember the Ten Commandments, right? If you say, what are the Ten Commandments? Even if they forget it, even if they're non-believers, simply asking them to remember the Ten Commandments is enough to diminish cheating. They, at MIT, they found that if you make people sign a document before they take a test, which is, I hereby pledge to follow the MIT Code of Honor, even though there is no such thing, they don't know that, right? The very act of committing yourself means they cheat less. In this experiment, this professor, inspired by our Ten Commandments experiment and its effect on honesty, Thomas Tang asked his students to sign an honor code stating, that they would not cheat in an exam. The pledge also stated that they would be sorry for the rest of their lives and go to hell if they cheated. The students who did not necessarily believe in hell or agree that they were going there were outraged. The pledge became very controversial, and perhaps unsurprisingly, Tang caught a lot of heat for his effort. He eventually had to revert to the old hell-free pledge. Still, I imagine that in his short existence, the extreme version of the honor code had quite an effect on the students. I also think that students' outrage indicates how effective this type of pledge can be. The future businessmen and women must have felt the stakes were very high, or they would not have cared so much. And then, being a good Israeli, secular Israeli, but still, he continues. Religious reminders. The possibility of using religious symbols as a way to increase honesty has not escaped religious scholars. There is a story in the Talmud about a religious man who becomes desperate for sex and goes to a prostitute. His religion wouldn't condone this, of course, but at the time he feels that he has more pressing needs. Once alone with a prostitute, he begins to undress. As he takes off his shirt, he sees his tzitzit, an undergarment with four pieces of knotted fringe. Seeing the tzitzit reminds him of the mitzvot, and he quickly turns around and leaves the room without violating his religious standards. Meaning, Ariely notes that this is something that psychologically is, we know to be very powerful, right? A mere reminder that you have to wear at all times is in fact super powerful. And this is, right, this is just a truth. So again, right, everything we talked about, remember we talked about this with mezuzah. Remember the Rambam that we looked at, the last halacha mezuzah? That anyone who has tefillin on their body and fits it on their clothing and mezuzah on their house and uses it as an opportunity to remember that there's God, he won't sin, right? It's not magic. It's that it reminds you. Again, this is, I think, the reason tzitzit gets to be part of Shema is because it's the idea that it is a constant reminder. The idea that it helps us be aware of God, and that's what keeps us on the straight and narrow, right? Constantly, consistently, etc. All those feed into the themes that we've seen as being central to Shema. Now, Rashi already quotes that, in particular, what are the two types of sins that Shema, that Sittin are very good at avoiding? Lo tatiru acharei levavchem v'acharei enechem. What do Chazal say? And Rashi quotes it in brief. Acharei levavchem zuminut. Acharei einechem zuznut. Right? Following the sins of your heart means it keeps you away from heresy. And following the sins of your eyes means it keeps you away from promiscuity. Right? From immorality. Now, if I just ask you, what's the common denominator to those two sins? Oh, sure. But I was just saying just practically. Very right, what is common of those practically? Right, what's the common denominator just practically between those two? Oh my God, I'm talking to a bunch of teenage boys. This is, you don't have to like be shy about this, right? Right? But as we know, sexual thoughts, right, and sexuality in general occupy much of our thoughts. They just do. They have, like, time-wise, energy-wise, right, they just do, right? I mean, we know that. This is not like, right, we may not talk about it all the time, but we know, right? Like, this is not, is this a surprise to anybody, really? Right? No, I hope not. Right? It just is. I mean, that's just the way people are wired, that more or less, right, sexuality occupies much of our thought, much of our energies, right, and therefore ensuring that we approach sexuality in the proper way requires constant effort, right? Right, without, you know, I don't want to give you a muster schmooze here, I'm just saying, very, right, very, like, mundanely, right, very prosaically, we know this, right, meaning the average human being, right, is preoccupied with sexuality. And therefore, the importance of constantly having a reminder that sexuality is potentially wonderful and important and positive, but you should also avoid the pitfalls that require con. I mean, think about the story that the Gemara tells you in Menachot. It doesn't tell you, or the end of the story is not, and the rabbi realized that he was wrong and he became celibate, right? No, that's not what it says. It says the end of the story is he married said prostitute who was the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen, right? And she was inspired by his commitment to his principles to convert so that he could marry her beheter, meaning that story under no circumstances is trying to tell you that sexuality is wrong or negative in any way. It's just telling you that there's a right way to channel those energies. But because it's something that weighs in your mind, it needs constant reinforcement to make sure that you channel it properly. The same is true of heresy. Right? What's the real problem with heresy? Right? Or the thoughts of heresy? It's not the same as sinning, like in action. Heretical thoughts are the type of thing that, right, have the potential to basically overtake what you think and therefore to change your perspective on life and to change your commitments. Meaning, the sins that are based in thought, that are most dangerous to a holistic religious life are those sins that occupy the imagination and reorient the focus of your life. And tzitzit in Chazal's right interpretation are meant to, as much as they remind you of all the mitzvot, they specifically help you ward off, as it were, improper sexual thoughts and improper beliefs. And again, I think that what Chazal are getting at is that the most dangerous sins are not just single actions. They're those that, yeah, exactly, I mean, that threaten to overtake your personality and therefore reorient the way you think about life. And tzitzit come to remind you about God so that you think about God and not about heresy, avodah zarah, whatever. Right? Meaning basically live according to a different religious ideal or anti-religious ideal, whatever it might be, or be swept up in your passions and therefore not have time and perspective to, right? Again, it's not telling you to not enjoy sexuality. It's saying don't be swept up in it, right? See, sin is just a reminder. It's not, right? It's not a, and therefore, again, consistently, I think that if you look through the way Chazal think about tzitzit, you realize that the same themes, the idea that it helps us constantly think about God, that it reminds us about keeping the mitzvot, it helps us avoid the pitfalls of those averot of the mind that threaten to replace our total commitment to God with other things that can be all immersive, right? All of that is wrapped up in tzitzit. And that's the type of thing that Shema and all the other mitzvot in Shema are there to do also. Mizuzah and Tefillin and Yichud Hashem and Avad Hashem. Right? So I think tzitzit does thematically really fit in to that whole scheme. Yeah, Joe?
I was just going to say, I think it's a great point. Like, as we see how Christianity messed up, saying like all priests have to be
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Torah doesn't believe, right, meaning Torah doesn't believe, right, we should clarify this. Torah doesn't believe that the solution to this is celibacy, because we know that for 99% of people, if not more, the result of demanding celibacy is creating some people who are, just feel frustrated sexually, right? Meaning, that's not what we're looking for. We're looking for reminders that will make sure that you channel things in proper ways that fit into a proper framework. Exactly. And that's exactly what, right, so tzitzit being the mitzvah that we choose, the parsha of tzitzit being the parsha that we choose to remember Yetziyat Mitzrayim, I don't think is accidental. Right? I just think that there's too much in the psukim themselves and the chazal's even more well-known midrashim about tzitzit that indicate that tzitzit is not an accidental choice to be the mitzvah that we use to remind ourselves about Yetziyat Mitzrayim. Shalach has your bar mitzvah parasha? Isn't your birthday now?
Yeah.
Okay. You're going to explain that to me later.
Yeah.
Okay. You'll explain that to me later. Fine.
I never understood why
it's a Shalach. Okay, good. So, I'm glad you asked. So, I wasn't going to spend too much time on this, but why then does... I think that by understanding why parasha 16 ends up in Shalach, right, we'll actually just add another element to this. So I will try to limit myself insofar as it answers that to our questions. Okay, so Joe asked the question, why is this year? So, since it's your bar mitzvah parsha, what is the most famous story of Parsha Shlach? The Meraglim, very good. What are they called in Parsha Shlach, Joe? No, they're not called Meraglim. The word Meraglim never comes up in Shlach. What? Right? It appears in Dvarim, but it doesn't appear in Shlach. What are they called? The people who were? Latur et Aretz. The people who went to tour the land. Latur et Aretz. Right? Very good. Now. Yeah. Yes, because later on they... Correct. But. Very good. So, Joe, now you tell me. In Shlach, the Meraglim are called those who are sent Latur et Haaretz. And what is the type of sin that Sittin are coming to ward off? Lo Taturu Acharei Levavchem Acharei Nechem. Right? Good. And the Tanchuma on that says, besides the Midrash we already quoted, Acharei Levavchem Zuminu et Acharei Nechem Zuznu, Chazal say something else. They say, Halev V'Hainayim Hein Sirsurin Laguf. The heart and the eyes are the messengers of the body. Shehein Mizanim et Aguf. They lead the body astray. Rashi paraphrases that Midrash, and what does Rashi say? Kimo Mitur Haaretz. It's the same word as the Meraglim who went to tour the land. Halev v'ha'enayim, the heart and the eyes, are heim miraglim lagus, are the spies of the body. So Rashi is very subtly telling you that why does this appear here, right? Because the Meraglim are a paradigmatic attempt of a failed... Okay. Oh, so, okay. Now, there's more to it. I could prove it to you very simply, because there are a few words that appear many times in the story of Meraglim. One is Latur, which comes up like 10 times, right? Vayatur et Eretz Kanan, Asher Lach Moshe Latur et Aretz, Latur et Eretz Kanan, Vayashuv Mitur Aretz, right? What are the other words that come up all the time there? Ri'iyah, variations on seeing. Uri temet aretz mahi, you'll see the land. V'gam yilidei ha'anak rinu sham, right? And there's one more word which comes up all the time there, which is einayim. Sham ra'inu ad nefilim b'nei anak min nefilim uni ve'einenu kechagavim. We were in their eyes like chagavim v'cheinayinu b'einayim. Meaning, the idea of spying and seeing and eyes, all those things that appear in Tzitzit, the Meraglim are like a dystopian version of what happens there. But now, Joe will say, okay, in what way is it a dystopian? I mean, how does Tzitzit in any way help this? So...
Well, it doesn't seem appropriate to compare that to the Meraglim, that
example. So I'll give you a theory, okay? Let me give you... There's a lot here, and I could give share on many, but let me give you an aspect to it. One thing that you notice in the Meraglim story is that, did they start right away by saying, let's go back to Mitzrayim? No, what happened? It goes like this, right? Right? They start by saying scary things and everyone cries. Then what happens? And then they say, oh, we wish we would have died. And then they say, And then they say, oh, it would have been, why did God bring us here? It would be better to go back to Egypt. So first, what do they say? First they cry. Then they say, we should have died in Egypt. Then they say, it would have been better to go back to Egypt. What's the next pasuk? Vayu'omru ish el achiv nitna rosh v'nashuv mitzrayim. Then they say, let's return to Egypt. Now, what do you very quickly notice there? What's happening? Very good. They're spiraling out of control. Meaning, first they cry because they're scared. Then they say it would have been better to stay in Egypt, but they don't actually say they should go back. Then they say it would have been better to go back to Egypt. And then what do they say? Let's go back to Egypt. Right? Meaning?
They're actualizing their
own strategy. Exactly. And then what does God punish them with by saying? Right? Asher, the nation, Asher, ayin ba'ayin, who with their eyes said this, right? I promise in Yeruah Aret, they will not see the land. Right? Meaning, what happened? The way the Torah describes it is basically, there was information that they saw, right? Which first they processed it badly, but then what did they do? They allowed it to slowly spiral and take over their psyche, right? They devolved. And that's what led them to want to go back, and that's what led to Meraglim, and that's what led to this tragedy. But as we talked about, there's a tremendous amount of power to reminders, right? Right, that's what Tzitzit does. If you realize that the Meraglim and the people's response spun out of control, meaning they saw certain things and then processed it and then slowly let it go out of control in their minds, then what's the solution to that type of craziness? Yeah, is to make sure that those don't spit out of the control. Because remember, we didn't say, we're not, right, as we said with sexuality, it's not a bad thing. What's it bad? What's bad? If you're taken over by improper sexuality, right? So what do you need? Just a reminder to stop you in your tracks. Right, and I think at some level, what Tzitzit is coming to do is saying, look, this is what out of control thoughts look like. Exactly, and that's why when Rashi quotes it as saying the eyes and the heart are the spies of the body, what they're saying is, look, if it stopped there, there'd be one thing, right? The problem is, you're going to see images that are going to excite you sexually. You're going to hear things that are going to make you question God, right? The key is to also have a constant reminder of God so that it stays at something manageable, rather than taking over the way it did with Meraglim. And therefore, the tzitzit are there to say, lo taturu, right? Meaning, don't end up in that type of spiral where you see something that leads you down a path. Right? And again, if you think about the story it tells about that guy who saw the prostitute, or he went to the prostitute, that's exactly what happens, right? He spirals out of control until the tzitzit whack him in the face, and they remind him, right, you're better than this. That's, in the end of the day, the anti-Meraglim. Right? And I think that, again, in that sense, without getting into the whole Meraglim, that insight is alone is enough for us to understand why the Parsha of Tzitzit is A, important in Shlach, and B, is important in Kriyat Shema. Because the Meraglim is an example, not of something that started off as all-encompassing. It's a little fear which, because they had nothing stopping them, they let it spiral to full-out heresy and a rejection of, as Ezra noted before, of Kavod Olmo Chutamayim, right? They wanted to reverse the Egypt process, right? The solution God gives you is little reminders. Because sometimes it's all you need, right? It's to stop yourself from spiraling. You need something to tell you, stop, calm down, right? Process, do damage control before it overtakes you, right? And again, as I've said several times, I think that's the point. That because so much of Shema are mitzvot that are about the totality of experience and commitment, Tzitzit fits there. Because what is there is a reminder, especially in the context of the most pernicious potential sins, right? Sexuality and minut, which could start off as mere sins but have the threat of overtaking your psyche. To have a reminder that says, no, constantly, just think about God enough. Have something on you that will keep you thinking about God, which will help you control yourself and live a lifestyle where those are integrated safely, rather than replacing God in your mind with other total experiences.
Do you think that if we had like a kind of change it to not form part of our own,
so that all the truth? No, that's Korach's thing, right? But no, but I do think that's why this mitzvah uniquely, and I talked about this last year, Menachot, that Chazal say that even if you, right, Chazal have this thing that tzitzit in particular, even if you're not obligated to tzitzit, you should go out of your way to wear a four-cornered garment. I think the reason that by tzitzit, unlike most mitzvot, we say, even though it's not a mitzvah chiyuvit, it's a mitzvah kiyumit, you should go out of your way to wear tzitzit, is because it has this power behind it. In a konami, exactly. Anyway, so that, I think, in brief, is why my overview theory of why CC does fit as part of this, but I promised Rule that I would finish for cake, so I'm finished, okay?